everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. I'm joined once again by Trevor from Dark Knight Nation and Rocky from Comic Boom. And it's time for week five of Future State. So we've kind of been looking forward to this week as seeing, okay, now we're going to get the second issue of some of these two-issue series. We're going to see how the creators wrap them up. It's going to give us a better idea overall of how it's going to go. Like, maybe they'll surprise us. Maybe the second issues will be so much more than better than the first. Maybe they'll wrap things up in a great way and we'll kind of have to eat our words a little bit and be like, oh, hey, yeah, this was great. I was surprised. I don't know. You'll have to listen to find out. I'm not just going to give it away, but yeah, we'll see. So let's start with Superman of Metropolis. Let me give the credits real quick. Sorry, guys. I think my wife just got home. Or not. All right. So it's written by Sean Lewis. We have John Timms as the artist, Gabe Eltab on colors, Dave Sharp on letters. And then there is the Mr. Miracle, the Shiloh Norman Mr. Miracle, which is written by Brandon Easton, art by Valentin D. Landreau, colors by Maurice Louise, and letters by Dave Sharp. And we did find out that there's going to be more of that coming. There was a series announced with Shiloh Norman, Mr. Miracle. I sort of feel, well, you know what? I'm going to save it for when I talk about that story. And then there's a Guardian story also written by Sean Lewis, art by Cully Hamner, colors by Laura Martin, and letters by Ann World Design. So, Rocky, why don't you start us off? What were your thoughts on Superman of Metropolis and the couple backup stories here?
Oh, man, you know, I had a lot of fun last night. I did my reviews of week five Future State on my own channel, and I had a lot of fun. I vented, and I probably overly vented and everything else because I had a few drinks in me, and I had some fun, and I didn't edit my video. I just posted it, and it was fun. I actually had fun reading this week just at how bad I thought some of these stories were. Superman of Metropolis, I have some sympathies for writer Sean Lewis because I really do think that this has remnants of the discarded Dan Didio storyline before Dan Didio was fired. I mean, rumor had it that John Kent was going to be very resentful of the planet Earth. Earth was going to be very upset with Superman for assuming that he could represent Earth at the United Planets, all flowing from the Bendis storyline and the idea that the worlds would hate Superman, except the people of Metropolis would love Superman. And the storyline involved John Kent sort of restricting himself to Metropolis because he wanted to be closer to people because they loved his dad. And it was, frankly, it was a really bad, bad theory. People weren't sure if that was actually true, but reading this storyline by Sean Lewis, I think actually that rumor was true because I didn't like the title of this, Superman of Metropolis. I think it's stupid. I think it's the premise itself is something that I thought was a little bit absurd, as if Superman would only represent Metropolis. Of course he would represent the Earth. I thought it was, I just didn't like the concept of it. And now, the story-wise, John Kent made a stupid mistake, a dumbfounded decision in shrinking Metropolis in the first issue. And in this issue, they really try to put lipstick on the pig. He blames it on brain cells. He blamed himself for being influenced. He blamed brain cells, this computer that's powered by Neridium, for influencing him, tricking him into shrinking Metropolis. So this future John Kent is such a loser. He doesn't even have he's not even man enough to own up for his own mistakes and his own accountability. And he bloody well should have apologized to the people of Metropolis at the end. But boy, how he got there, what a mess. Supergirl, you know, last issue ended with Superboy, or I want to call him Superboy because, and you want to know why I'm calling him Superboy and not Superman? It's because for whatever reason, artist John Timms decided to draw him skinnier than Supergirl. I don't understand that artistic choice, but he didn't look like a man to me. He looked like a boy throughout this issue. So much about this issue run me the wrong way, but I guess I'm trying to find some humor in it. I'm being a little bit scattershot in my review and my comments. I apologize, but it was an exercise in sad amusement and futility reading this I'm glad at the end, Superman slash John Kent decided that it was a good idea to defeat Brain Cells and return Metropolis to Earth with the help of Supergirl. But yet, could somebody explain to me why he let Brain Cells go? Brain Cells is the enemy. He defeats Brain Cells, but then he works with Brain Cells, leaves Supergirl with Brain Cells, and they're not going to dismantle him. I didn't quite understand that. I found this story baffling and confusing. Surface level, it's simple enough to catch on to. Surface level, it's just John Kent screwing up, accidentally, tricked by his computer to shrinking Metropolis. Instead of just getting rid of the army in Metropolis, he shrinks Metropolis like an idiot. And then eventually he enlarges Metropolis and he gives all of the citizens of Metropolis an apology. This was really one-dimensional storytelling. And again, I'm going to do Sean Lewis a favor, and I'm going to assume that he didn't have a lot of control maybe on this story, and that maybe this story started off a lot worse than this. I suspect it did, from what their original plans were for 5G. But this was definitely a... Again, I thought it was amusing, but this was a failure for me. On the artistic level, I didn't like it artistically, and I didn't like the story. End of rant.
Well, anything to say about the backups?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I always forget about the backups. Shiloh Norman, the Mr. Miracle backup, makes me really worried about Shiloh Norman, that Mr. Miracle having his own series, because I don't think he should. This was a really boring character. The Mr. Miracle backup was a complete waste of paper, because, in fact, in my review, I took the very first page of the Mr. Miracle backup and the very last page, and you read them side by side. That's all you need to read to understand the story. The entire story is him just being chased by these robots that ultimately at the end managed to successfully hit him and transport him onto War World. Sorry, I got some guy shoveling my walk here. Anyways, nothing I can do about that. But in any event, the Mr. Miracle, I thought, was very much sort of a wasted opportunity to actually tell a story, because not much happens. And the art, again, was, I didn't like the art. I didn't like the art. The Guardian story was a little bit better, dealing with the villain Honest Mary. The Guardian ends up saving Jimmy Olsen from this Honest Mary character. And I will leave the larger commentary to you guys on this Guardian backup, but I will say this. Sean Lewis, who wrote the Superman of Metropolis story, is the same writer of Guardian. And what makes it disappointing is, did you guys notice that the endings did not match? The endings did not match. It's the same writer and the endings did not match. Superman of Metropolis ends with John Kent coming back, apologizing to the citizens of Metropolis. And the Guardian ends with a different sequence of Superman doing the very same thing, but they don't match. And it actually is a little bit jarring. And in any event, the Guardian story was okay, but it was a waste. I got the sense, I don't know about you guys, but when I read the Mr. Miracle story and the Guardian story, both are supposed to take place in the Bottle City of Metropolis. And if you read the Mr. Miracle story, you get the sense that is this, how long were they in the bottle for? 6 months? I read the Guardian story and I'm thinking this whole story took place over a weekend. I don't, the time thing is all over the place. And yet, and I'm not even sure if you read the Superman of Metropolis story, it didn't seem like Metropolis was in the bottle for very long. So there was, again, the problem with Future State is that all these timelines are being mixed up, but even the timelines and the stories taking place in and of themselves seem to be difficult to get a handle on in terms of exactly what's taking place and when. Overall, I thought the whole thing was very much a waste, and I'm prepared to just forget about Superman and Metropolis and move on. I really do get the sense it's a remnant of a Bendis abandoned storyline, and this is and they already had this stuff on the page and they just tweaked it a bit. And Sean Lewis did his best to try to make this more coherent and ultimately failed.
Yeah, if you didn't read it carefully, I can see how you'd think that. There is kind of a throwaway line in Superman and Metropolis about the timeline, where John says, I can't change how the people will take it. Space time makes hours into months, months of their lives. They lived with uncertainty. So it's been months for them and hours for John Kent and Supergirl. So that's just lazy in my mind.
Well, I appreciate that. I miss that. That makes sense.
Oh, it's easily, like I said, it's a throwaway line. It's easy to miss. And it's lazy. It's lazy writing. So, anyway, Trevor, what are your thoughts for some reason, I think you're going to just sum it up in about three words and move on, but we'll see if I'm wrong.
Yeah. It's pretty bad. So I think those are the three words, that'll pretty much sum up my opinion of it. You know, I don't want to beat a dead horse, but boy, does this guy not know how to write a cohesive story? That's really, you know, honestly, I'm not giving him an out. I'm sorry, Rock. I can't agree with you. Bad writing deserves to get called out, and this was bad writing. I heard an interview with Sean Lewis from a peer of mine. And Sean Lewis sounds like a really nice guy. He seems really friendly with his audience. And one of the things he was talking about was him sort of pouring in his own daddy problems into John Kent. Surprise, Sean. You're not John Kent. John Kent is not you. Don't make John Kent you. Okay. It's not how it works. You write the character to the character. You don't write yourself into the character, at least not intentionally. So, you know, I could really go at how bad the dialogue was, how lazy the plotting was, how inconsistent everything was, but I'm not. I'm just going to leave it at this wasn't a good story. I don't think a single story in this issue was worth buying. So if anybody is listening to this and hasn't gotten a chance to pick it up and thought about picking it up, just don't do it. That's it.
All right, I'm going to go into a little more detail than that. I also didn't like it. And I agree with a lot of what Rocky said in terms of this not this. It's supposed to be a Superman story. And you know, this is John Kent at a less mature level than Bendis even writes him. So that just doesn't work. And so, you know, overall, we're talking about bad writing. Well, you know, it's things that just don't make sense, like that throwaway line that's so easy to miss. I did think that it was cool having the idea of the clones, the different versions of Superman show up that John has to sort of deal with. But again, it felt disjointed, like that idea kind of comes out of nowhere. But then I find myself constantly questioning the motivations of the heroes. And I would argue that the Supergirl characterization isn't that bad. She's a little more militant, a little more, she has more of an edge to her than we normally see her, but even she does things that are completely inexplicable. If you only have like one gun that's, you know, the shrink ray or the anti-shrink ray that can, you know, bring Metropolis back, and John's out there, you know, trying to rescue Metropolis, and even the robots of the Fortress of Solitude are telling you, don't use the gun out there because we don't know how it will react in those unknown conditions. You got to bring the city back, Metropolis back, and then you can, you know, re-enlarge it. Then why in the hell would you take the gun out there in the first place so that it could be damaged or lost or broken? It makes zero sense. That's all I could think. It's like, why are you taking, the robots say space gravity could affect the rays. The rays shrink, blah, 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 blah. No worries. I'll bring it to Earth, says Supergirl. Okay, then why are you taking the gun? It makes no sense at all. It's just stupid. I'm sorry. It's just stupid. So there were little things like that that just bugged the crap out of me. And I completely agree with Rocky about the whole concept of Superman of Metropolis rather than Superman belonging to the world being totally flawed. I'm sorry. That just doesn't work on any level for me. And that's it. And that's all I'm going to say about the story. As far as the art goes, I kind of felt the same way. They're just little things that just don't work for me. You know, Rocky mentioned John Kent being skinnier than Supergirl, which, yeah, that doesn't make sense. I had a really hard time when we saw the sequence of panels with the different versions of Superman, where the dialogue is really hokey and corny. So that Sean Lewis can beat us over the head with, hey, these are four Supermen from different eras. Oh, I fought Nazis. I fought during the Red Scare. The third one, he's got the mullet. So obviously we know this is, you know, the Superman that came back after Doomsday died. But I'm assuming he's pointing his finger at John as he's talking. But I had to stare at that panel for quite a while before I figured out just what the hell is that supposed to be? It's just the panel is not laid out well at all. And then, again, I'm assuming this was directed by Sean Lewis because I can't really explain why else he would do it. When John does get Metropolis back to Earth and the city is down in the hole and he's left holding the kind of the fishbowl it was in, and he pushes his hands together and it blows up. Is this all of a sudden, oh, John is Billy Badass? Oh, look at him. He destroyed a glass. Like, why? Mm-hmm. It's just I don't like the composition of the panel. It's not in keeping with the entire characterization you've had of John the whole time. It's just dumb. It's just dumb. And to Rocky's point earlier about the endings of the stories not matching up, because you made this such a moment, you called it out. I think it's terrible, but you chose to do it, Sean Lewis. And then when we get to the end of the Guardian story, when John goes to apologize, we see him busting through the glass bowl, the glass dome, to go and apologize to the citizens of Metropolis. There is no glass dome. You made a moment of destroying it in the first story.
Not only that, in the first story, if you look at the panel in the first story, there isn't the ray gun isn't used. If you look at it, it makes no sense. Supergirl still has the gun that's going to enlarge Metropolis with her in space.
Yep.
And John just is holding the Metropolis in the bottle or whatever. And then all of a sudden there's an explosion and John is still holding the bottle when the city is enlarged in front of him. If you look at the bottom panel, it makes no sense.
Yeah.
It makes no sense. I was baffled by it. Like, why is he still holding it? I mean, it just made no sense.
Yeah.
You know, man.
Like Trevor said, stay away from this comic if you can. I don't have much to say about the Mr. Miracle story. The art is terrible. I really did not care for the style of art. As far as them coming out with this, I think it's supposed to be a 6-issue miniseries starring Shiloh Norman as Mr. Miracle. All I can ask is why. We all love Scott Free. We love Mr. Miracle. Why are you shoving Shiloh Norman down our face or down our throats? All I can think of is for diversity's sake, because Shiloh Norman's a person of color. And okay, great. Yeah. But he needs to have his – I never liked Shiloh Norman as a character exactly for the reason of why are you putting him in the Mr. Miracle costume? If you want to create a Shiloh Norman character and have him be a hero, then go ahead. Don't call him Mr. Miracle. Call him something else. Let him be his own character rather than derivative of some white superhero. So, you know, I just don't – it feels like something that's being done. It feels like diversity for diversity's sake, which I'm never a fan of. I'm all for more diverse characters, but not just to shove it in our face. So, I mean, it could be good. I mean, I'm really happy to hear that this Valentin Delandro is not going to be doing the art on that other series. So maybe that'll make it better. I don't know. And the other part that I didn't like about it was the fact that it's not linear. Right. Because we got the first issue with the first part of the story, first issue of Superman and Metropolis, first part of the story. Then the third part of the story is in the first issue of Worlds of War. And now, you know, in release order, now this is part two. So why didn't you just throw this in, you know, Superman Worlds of War? So they at least could have come out in order. Right. Because supposedly this story ends and then you have to go back a couple of weeks to Worlds of War, and that's the next part of the story. So I don't know, that doesn't make sense to me. As far as the Guardian story, it was okay. I did like the fact that at least we had just one artist as opposed to part one where we had two different artists, so at least it was consistent with Cully Hamner art, and I enjoy Cully's art. He does have a little bit of a thick line, but I think it works. But it was just average. It was just okay, you know, like leaving out the inconsistencies with the first story. If you just look at this on its own, it's okay. It's a smaller scale story and probably a little better suited for where Sean Lewis is in his career right now. So it worked on that level, but I wouldn't pick up a Guardian series because it's not anything special. So I thought it was okay. And when I'm saying okay, you know, I'd give it like a 4.5 or a 5 out of 10. And it's far and away the best story in the book because the others are way, way, way further down the scale. It tells you everything you need to know. Don't go out and spend whatever it is $5.99 or whatever on this book, because it's not good. And you know, I always feel bad telling people not to buy Superman, but this isn't Superman. Not in characterization, not in story. It just doesn't work.
I just want to throw one thing in, Jace. There was also one other throwaway line that was stated by John Kent, and he says, "My therapy sessions are going to go through the roof."
Oh yeah.
And that to me basically sums it up, because how often have we all criticized the aging up of John Kent through being psychologically tormented by Ultraman in the volcano on Earth 3? And we've always joked that, I mean, how can John Kent come back from that and be aged up and not have any ill psychological effects or post-traumatic stress of some kind? And then here out of the blue, apparently, are we to believe that John Kent is in fact seeing a therapist over the last few 4 or 5 years? Or is that just a throwaway line of him being humorous? I don't know, but I just sort of like chuckled and shook my head when I read that.
Yeah, I didn't like it. And one more thing I'll say about the art too. So this one, it's weird. I imagine in a trade, this isn't going to, it's going to seem so inconsistent. In the first issue, we had so many of those pages where the backgrounds were like circuitry or these crazy designs. Tim's does almost none of that here, but the art is still really busy. So it's not that his line, I don't think his line work is bad at all. I think his line work is actually pretty good, especially in the fight scenes. The flaw, I think, in his art is the composition. The panels are just packed with too much stuff.
There's way too much energy, and he lets it overrun him.
Yeah. And so it's like, oh my God, I need to take a nap after I read this, because it's really hard on the eyes. So anyway, yeah. I think we've beat this one up enough. Let's move on to Harley Quinn. Written by Stephanie Phillips. The art is by Simone DeMayo and Tony Infante. Colors by Tamara Bonvillain and letters by Troy Pateri. What'd you think of this one, Trevor?
I thought it was pretty good. I actually had to end up catching up because I didn't read the first issue of Harley. But, you know, if Riley Rossmo weren't drawing this ongoing series, I would have considered picking up Stephanie Phillips Harley, to be honest with you, because it wasn't bad. You know, Simone DeMayo is really well known for having really energetic art that's like hyper dynamic. But I found that in his Future State Harley, you can tell it's a little bit rushed because it becomes a little bit hard to discern. DeMayo does this thing where, and this is somewhat consistent throughout his art as a whole, but is made glaringly obvious here, is that he likes this really tight paneling with dynamic angles, which he does often and is a blessing and a curse. Half the time, the shots are way too close on the face during action beats, so you don't quite know what's going on physically until later. So, you know, you lose a little bit of that impact. The backup artist Infante, I think, you know, I'll give them credit. I think they do a pretty good job at trying to match DeMayo. Obviously, it's not super, super high fidelity, but I can see where the effort was made and give them credit. I think Phillips, you know, this is the first thing, you know, these two issues of Harley are the first thing I've ever read from Stephanie Phillips. And I'm actually pretty impressed with her dialogue overall. I think she is able to mold it to a degree that it differentiates the characters through cadence, vocabulary, and as a result, imbues them with their own individual personalities, which I like, and is honestly not super common with comic book writers I've noticed lately, especially not in Future State. So I give her a lot of credit. And not being a big Harley guy, I did like how balanced Harley's characterization was in the story. One part comical and zany, and one part actually intellectual and intelligent and analytical. And I felt like she did a pretty good job of not making those two sides feel sort of jarring from one another. I felt like they were housed within the same character and that it was organic. You know, overall the story wasn't anything crazy. It wasn't anything, you know, to write home about, but you know what? The setup was pretty fun. The story was tight enough and it was paced pretty well. So, you know, I give her credit, especially amongst the mountain of duds that Future State has, especially after talking about the Superman book. Notice how the most long-winded person in this chat had almost nothing to say about the Superman book because he's just tired of complaining. But by comparison, I rather enjoyed this Harley Quinn story. And like I said, if Rossmo wasn't the main artist on Stephanie Phillips Harley Quinn, I would have actually considered picking up a Harley Quinn book for the first time in my life as a pull. So, you know, fine story.
So I'm also not a Harley guy. I'm a huge Stephanie Phillips fan. I think she's great. She's been on the show numerous times. But I really don't care for Harley. So it's not just Rossmo. It's the character as well. Why I won't be picking up the new series. I want to, but it would be a waste of money. I didn't enjoy this. But I don't think it's bad. This particularly this story, it just isn't for me. I don't care for Professor Pig. And I'm just not a Harley fan. That being said, it's one of the better Harley stories I've read, because what Stephanie Phillips is doing here, like Trevor alluded to, the Harley stories that I do enjoy, like Joker Harley Criminal Sanity, or the Harley Quinn that's in the Sean Gordon verse, the White Knight Harley Quinn series that I'm enjoying, it's a much more analytical Harley. Just like, you know, Trevor said, she's not zany. We get a little zaniness from her here. But that's because it's the Harley in the regular universe. You have to. But I do enjoy the fact that she's she was kind of one step ahead the whole time of the Scarecrow, and Scarecrow thought he was pulling her puppet strings, and it was flipped around. It was the other way around. So that's great to see. I think the artwork is very dynamic. So I think overall it's a great issue, and we're probably going to see more of this version of Harley, and I'll talk about that later when we talk about the next Batman. But overall, I thought it was fine. I think if you're a fan of Harley, you'll enjoy it. And if you're not a fan of Harley like me, you'll probably just kind of read it, shrug your shoulders, and kind of move on. So, yeah, it was fine. I don't think technically there was anything wrong with it at all. I thought it was done very well. It's just I'm not a Harley fan. As opposed to Rocky, who likes Harley. So I'm curious what you thought about this issue, Rocky. I have a feeling you probably really liked it.
I did. And honestly, I'm incapable of articulating myself as well as Trevor just did. He did an amazing job. Kudos, Trev. I share your sentiments and the way you summed it up very, very, very well. I love Stephanie Phillips. In fact, I will say that Jace, I did vote Stephanie Phillips as the best up and coming talent of 2020, in the best of 2020. In your podcast, and I stand by that, and she continues to get better. I'm really impressed. I just want to give a shout out to Gary Frank and Brad Anderson on their one of the very few cover B covers. The variant covers is just absolutely gorgeous on for this Harley Quinn number two issue. A shout out to them. And yeah, Stephanie Phillips, I really noticed the dialogue. She really nailed the dialogue. There was humor and fun here as well. Humor is a very tough thing to pull off. For 75 issues of the Harley Quinn main series, many of the issues, and I'm talking about the latest one that just ended in 2020, it just wasn't all that funny. And that was sort of the downturn of it. But for Frank Cho's covers, I think that was the only thing that kept that series going. Harley Quinn needs a change of pace. She needs a boost. And she's gotten that with Harley Quinn and the Birds of Prey with Amanda Connor and Jimmy Palmiotti with their Black Label, but that's just ended now. Their book four came out, but Stephanie Phillips, I actually think this is better written than a lot of what I've read from Jimmy Palmiotti and Amanda Connor's Harley Quinn. She's got a handle on this character, and I don't know about you, but every time I see Stephanie Phillips likes to color her hair. She's young. She's opinionated. She's passionate about comic book writing. She actually kind of reminds me of, like, she's like the Harley Quinn of writers. I she actually kind of looks like Harley Quinn in a way.
I literally just had the same thought right before you said that. I was like, you know, she kind of is Harley in real life.
Yeah. I really do think this is her time to shine. And my only hope is that Riley Rossmo's art is not something that is going to maybe, you know, make it shine less bright than maybe I'm hoping it's inclined to shine. So I don't need to add anything to Trevor's comments. I love the art. I love this story. I love how Harley at the end of the day really got one up on both Black Mask and Jonathan Crane, and did so in a way that was so wonderfully Harley, and just a really good read.
Yeah, I agree. All right, let's move on to Swamp Thing number two. This is written by Ram V, Mike Perkins on art, Jun Chung on colors, and Aditya Bedekar on letters. I have mixed feelings about this one. I think that Ram V is a great writer, and I think that if he'd had more time to flesh out the story, more space, more than two issues, it could have been something. But I think it's just it's too crowded. The kind of the resolution, the emotional impact, it's just so jarring. You know, Swamp Thing ends up having to sacrifice the other members of his plant race that he's created in order to save the humans, because it's what the green does, right? It protects the humans. But even then he has to, it's like always darkest before the dawn, I guess. You know, he makes this huge sacrifice, but then he saves the human race, but the human race still has to undergo all this suffering for generations, apparently. But overall, the big ideas are sort of cool, you know, and the fact that we go far, far into the future and the sun has finally reappeared, and okay, the legend of the Swamp Thing, they don't necessarily call it that, but the legend of you know, the bean who saved them still exists, and we see a plant beginning to grow now that the sun has come back. So yeah, they're great ideas, and I think just emotionally it doesn't quite hit the beats the way it should, because it's the story is so truncated. This is a big story that, you know, you could tell over the course of a year or year and a half in a Swamp Thing title. So I guess it's a good thing for Swamp Thing fans that Ram V is going to be writing the ongoing Swamp Thing. I'm not a Swamp Thing fan, but I still did find this enjoyable. I was a little disappointed when we saw Obsidian at the end of issue one. I thought, oh, cool, we're going to get some Obsidian. Nah, not really. He's just a plot device. So that was fine. The art from Mike Perkins, just kind of similar to what I've been saying all along with Future State. It's just not up to his usual, you know, his usual level of quality. Kind of the same thing we saw in issue one, we're seeing here, where the art just feels a little bit rushed. But that's probably, you know, more an editorial and a timing thing than anything else. So it's hard for me to, you know, hold that against him. As far as the composition of the panels, it's fine. He definitely varies the layout of the panels on the page, and the camera angles and the shapes of the panels are, you know, all that stuff is done very well, moves our eyes around the page very well. I'll also call out Bidikar, the letterer. You know, she gets to use different shaped word balloons based on who's talking, and she does a good job. And I thought all that flowed really well. So overall, technically, I think it's a pretty good book. It just suffers from the fact that Ram V just probably didn't have enough space to tell the story that he wanted to tell. So what were your thoughts on this one, Trevor?
I actually thought Ram V filled things out pretty well. One of my biggest complaints from the first issue was that we got pretty much no plot and a lot of theme. And it was slow. And I think that this issue really did fill out a lot of that plot. And I think thematically really built upon where Ram V succeeded. I like the conversation that Ram V is generating. It is almost akin in a way to the conversation that Tom King generates in Vision in some sorts. And I found that really profound. There's this sort of running metaphors of Swamp Thing's obsession with humanity and the antagonists' disposition of it, and it serves as a really great way to develop conflict and to conduct a really interesting philosophical dichotomy here. The anatomy lessons also provide this really interesting way to provide exposition and sort of delivering more of the theme of the story. It's used almost ironically in a way to discuss the resilience of man and nature through an almost like Taoist practice to warn against absolutism on either side. And I found that really, it makes you think, I think, and when it comes to theme, you know, if it's making you think or feel a certain way, it's doing its job. You know, there's a really cool sort of scratchiness to Mike Perkins' art in this issue, as there was in the last. I think that it matches tonally to the sort of budding supernatural and horror atmosphere that the story is setting. You know, it's not super clean, but I think in a Swamp Thing story, it's not meant to be super clean. I've never found an artist that does, you know, really, really tight art for Swamp Thing on a design level and had it be successfully Swamp Thing. I think there needs to be a little bit of grit to it. It's organic, it's dark, and especially in this sort of post-apocalyptic world, I think it fits pretty well, actually. There's, like Jason said, I mean, what's happening with camera and layout is really, really well done. You know, it's dynamic, He knows where to put the camera at the right time for the right moment. And I can certainly appreciate that. And, you know, like Jason said as well, the lettering design by Aditya Bikar was really well done, particularly with placement and what they're doing with sound effects lettering. I think was really well done, both in the design and the placement. I give it a lot of credit there, because I've actually had complaints throughout Future State with quite a few letterers, and I think Bikar is really doing a solid job here. Overall, I thought this was a good story, and honestly, the fact that he was able to stick the landing so well in the second issue, when I didn't think he would be able to by the end of the first, I think really speaks volumes. He knew what he was doing and where his story was going, and I think he landed it really well. And again, if you want a story that's really going to make you think about the world and you know, humanity and what, how we serve our own purposes, I think this is a great story to read. So I look forward to reading Ram V. Swamp Thing, honestly. And I was pleasantly surprised by this issue, by how much I did enjoy it.
All right. Fair enough. What are your thoughts, Rocky?
Well, I'm going to be a little bit of an outlier on this one. First, I want to say that I've never been a Swamp Thing fan, and that includes the Alan Moore run. However, I can objectively look at pacing, structure, you know, storytelling, multiple reviews, insightful commentary, speaking outside, breaking the fourth wall at times throughout Swamp Thing's history. I can objectively say, yes, it's good. And I want to give compliments. This was a good Swamp Thing story. I'm glad I read this. This was one of the better ones of the week. Having said that, I just want to vent a little bit. First, I want to, I'm openly wondering why readers are bitching so much about Wally West being treated so badly, and yet everyone seems to give Swamp Thing a pass, and I don't really understand why. Swamp Thing has died and been brutalized far more than Wally West in the last little bit. Swamp Thing died in the Justice League Dark book before the events of this comic took place. He died in Immortal Wonder Woman that takes place after this story takes place. And now he dies here as well, but at different points in time, he's killed humanity in the first issue, and he kills his kids in this issue. And we're all supposed to be impressed by Swamp Thing's, Swamp Thing's, he's so in touch with his humanity, and we're supposed to get some deep themes out of this story when in fact he's been, I just find it interesting that we give a free pass to Swamp Thing, and yet, and I'm hypocritical on this too. I find it interesting how readers will treat those two characters differently. I realize they're very different characters. Swamp Thing is a very different character than Wally West. Obviously I get that, but this is too dark a tale for me. And this for me is the reason why it doesn't resonate with me, is because every single Swamp Thing story is like this. It's always dark. It's always gloomy. There's never a bright light. I mean, even the way this story ends with Obsidian's cloud permeating and covering the earth for centuries, and Swamp Thing heroically pushes his branches outside the dark cloud to capture a little bit of sunlight that goes through his roots and maintains and preserves the life of humanity for centuries until finally there's plant life centuries later. You know, I guess you can say, well, you know, there's hope and it's there. But that to me is about as low kind of hope and depressing as you can get in a story that supposedly ends on a high note. So I'm giving an underhanded compliment here, is that at least this is my intention. This Ram V is a good writer. He actually made me stand up and take notice of this Swamp Thing story. He's done a great job on Catwoman too. Mike Perkins is finally getting some recognition he deserves. And it's interesting. It always depends on who you draw. Mike Perkins was the artist on 12 issues of Lois Lane, and I really liked it, but most people hated his art on Lois Lane. But yet you have him draw Swamp Thing, and people are loving it. And it's just because it's a different character. It's drawing the plant life and the earth. And it's just, he's more suited, his style, and particularly the way the colors were done. It's just Swamp Thing is definitely more suited toward Mike Perkins' kind of art. But in any event, I thought it was, I was really glad I read Swamp Thing this week. And I say that because I read it digitally. It's the only comic I didn't buy. And yet, if I'm embarrassed to say, I picked up Superman and Metropolis and and not this one. So that's definitely on, you know, I deserve a bitch slap for that. But in any event, I'm glad I picked it up, but I do find it's rather interesting that we seem to be, readers seem to be loving Swamp Thing but hating Flash.
Well, I think the thing that makes this so much profoundly better, I guess, as an installment of, you know, quote unquote depressing Swamp Thing stories, is that, like, he, you know, he's not making the foolish decisions that they're making Wally West, you know, decide. I mean, they're making Wally West a villain. Multiple times over, either a villain, excuse me, or a moron. And in this case, Swamp Thing is certainly not. And I think that what makes this so profound is that he's not giving up his children. I mean, he's giving up part of himself. He made these children by essentially severing parts of his own psyche and giving himself the company that he never had. And what he's doing, he's not sacrificing his children. He's sacrificing part of himself. He's sacrificing his own wants, his own desires, which are inherently and ironically human, for a plant, right? He wants that companionship, and he's making that sacrifice in order to help people because he believes in humanity. And as somebody who you know, I normally think that stories about hope can be overly tropey. I thought that this was, in a way, it carried some real weight to it and some real gravity, because things do often look very hopeless. And the thing that makes humanity so special is that we don't just sort of succumb to, quote unquote, rationality. Hope is an irrational force, and that's what it should be. So, you know, I definitely counter that and say that there is a purpose to doing what is being done with Swamp Thing here, as opposed to Wally. Now, I can't speak for those other stories, because I think, you know, two out of the four that you brought up are poorly written anyways. And I feel like that shouldn't reflect on the character as much as it does the writing. But, you know, there's
bottom line is, he's a plant and Wally's a human. We care more about humans than we do plants. You can just plant another tree, kill Swamp Thing, plant a couple of trees. You're fine. That's the bottom line. But as far as there, you know, there's one, it just reminded me, as I was listening to Trevor talk, there was one other thing that I wanted to mention. You know, you said they're making Wally a villain. They're really going the other way with Harley, which we're seeing right now. Very evident in what Stephanie Phillips is doing in Future State. I didn't read the article the other day, but I did see an article that said basically Harley, they're making Harley the hero she always should have been. And I think Rocky kind of touched on it when we did our best of 2020, and he gave Punchline his favorite villain, new villain of 2020, because they need to replace Harley as a villain, because really they're making Harley a hero. So yeah. I was going to mention that when we talked about the Harley issue, and I forgot. So I just wanted to bring that up. Anyway, let's move on. Wonder Woman part two, or issue two, written by Joelle Jones. Also, she handles the art. We've got Jordy Belair on colors, Clayton Cowell on letters. I thought the lettering was great. I thought the coloring was really spectacular. I was on record as not caring very much for the color work in the first issue, even though it was Jordy Belair, who's my best colorist of 2020. But the whole first issue I felt had this green tint. Maybe it was just the press preview copy they sent me, but it just didn't look right. And so I'm glad that has been corrected. I didn't really care much for the first issue. I did enjoy this one a lot more. I do still have a little bit of trouble with Yara Flores' characterization, in as much as during the time this is written, she's supposed to have been Wonder Woman for a really long time. And the lesson she learns here seems to me that this would have been a lesson she would have had to learn a long time ago, you know, that heroes sacrifice. And so that's a little bit incongruous to me. It's like, yeah, she seemed like she would have known that all along, but it's a minor nitpick, you know. The bottom line is, whether or not she's supposed to have been around for years and years, that really she's a new hero, right? She's a new creation. And so I'm not going to fault Joelle Jones for not getting the characterization 100% correct, because she's still, you know, finding her way with Yara Flor as as a character. There were a couple of moments in here that I still thought were kind of hokey that harkened back to the first issue where I didn't care for it. You know, when she gets the arm bones and throws them to get rid of a three-headed dog, you know, to make it chase that. But again, there were minor nitpicks. I think emotionally it hits what it's supposed to hit, and you feel the moments that you're supposed to feel. And I thought Joelle Jones' art was done really well. And particularly the color, the coloring scheme in certain panels where it's dichromatic, it's just red and white to give it impact. I thought those worked really well also. So overall, I did enjoy it far more than I did the first issue. But I don't think I enjoyed it enough that I'll be picking up Joelle Jones' Yara Floor Wonder Girl series. It's just, again, I think this character is not for me, which is fine. And I hope other people enjoy it. So, Rocky, what are your thoughts on this one?
I feel like a fanboy gushing. I feel like I have got no objectivity. I just love this. I didn't need word bubbles in this. I could have just stared at the pages. The use of the red, black, and the white, the colors are just absolutely gorgeous. There are scenes, the introduction of Persephone, I mispronounced that, didn't I?
Persephone.
Persephone, thank you. that was a gorgeous, gorgeous page. When it shows Hades and the devil screaming as Yara is successful in finding her Amazon friend, Patera. And I love the flashback sequences that are just in red ink. And I think it works so well. And it just really visually, I truly believe I went through this and I imagine the word bubbles not there. And I could actually piece together what the story was just from the pictures. I really think I could have done that. I almost wish they would have done that, because as the highest compliment to Joelle Jones and Jordi Belair is that if you don't need word balloons and you can love this story, wow, it's really incredible. And also, I just want to give a shout out in general to the concept that, you know, a lot of it, as a longtime reader of Wonder Woman, I've often complained that Wonder Woman is too perfect and that she's too preachy and there's not enough flaws in Wonder Woman. And that's actually as part of the story. On the final page, it's actually part of Yara's thinking when she says your heroes not because they are perfect, but because of imperfections overcome. I suppose that is why we continue to tell their stories, and that really is it. This Yara Floor, she has imperfections, and this one here, I think learning the lesson that you can't win. She loses. She fails to save her friend, but her friend tells her, I thank you for giving me noble meaning to my life, but your ending is not yet written. Show the world your purpose. I can't think of a better ending for an introductory two issues into Yara Floor. This is a perfect two issue story to give to someone to say, look, this is the new Wonder Woman. And I particularly love a sequence in there where one of the that fairy character, whose name I forget, actually talked about her, you know, at one point not being preachy. And Yara actually said, I'm not one to give speeches. I love that because the last thing I want is another Wonder Woman character giving a speech, because Lord knows Diana gives far too many of them. This is my favorite Wonder Woman by far, and I'm so looking forward to Joelle Jones writing Wonder Girl, which I'm assuming Wonder Girl is going to be Yara Floor, younger version of Yara Floor. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's our understanding, yeah.
Yeah, good. I'm looking forward to that. But yeah, this was my favorite of the week.
All right, Trevor, your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought this was another good one. It certainly wasn't without its flaws. I think I actually tend to lean opposite to you, Jace, on the art. I thought the art was better in the last issue, but it's mostly in a design sense. From a visually narrative sense, Joelle Jones is doing just as expertly, you know, with the way she's telling the story. You know, my qualms with the art are simply personal design choices, you know, not as much of me trying to make an objective statement about a declining quality in the art. It's just a me thing. But you know, from a visually narrative perspective, it was great. Colors, I thought, were just as good as the last issue. I think Belair did incredible colors in the last issue and does a good job with a more consistent palette because, you know, at that point in the first issue, the sort of tone of the story is a little bit more consistent. And this one fluctuates because it's a little bit more high energy. Therefore, the color palette fluctuates. And the colors do really help in the sort of development of tone and in the narrative in that sense. So yeah, Yara Flor is a character with a lot of energy. Sure, there was a little bit of cheese in this issue, but I thought it was well-placed cheese. You know, there is a value for cheese when cheese knows when and how to be cheese. And I think that this issue certainly had that. You know, the character of Yara Flor is interesting. She's fun. She is likable, which is, you know, like Rock, I haven't felt Diana has been in a decent while. And what I like is that, again, this is a Wonder Woman that has things to learn. And now I guess I wasn't paying attention to the timeline just because I know DC editorial has been boning their own timeline for the last month. So, you know, I don't really put a lot of weight into it. You know, for me, this was maybe an earlier Yara Flor story, and that's what it felt like. Maybe that wasn't the intent of editorial, but you know, for an introductory series to this character, I thought it was really well done. And I am certainly teetering on picking up the Wonder Girl series, to be honest with you. You know, I mean, just Joelle Jones is really killing it, and I'm really hoping that, you know, what she's going to be able to bring to Yara Flor as opposed to Catwoman is that Yara Flor really is her character. You know, she got to, for the most part, build Yara Flor from the ground up rather than being handed a character with 80 years of continuity and whatnot to deal with. So I do look forward to this, and I do look forward to Joelle Jones taking a character that can be a little bit more the warrior. You know, it was a good book, man. It was a solid book. I'm invested in the character, you know, and again, I really got to give kudos on a visually narrative perspective to what Joelle Jones is doing with the art, whether it's what she's doing with camera setup, layout, what have you. It's clear that Joelle Jones is a veteran comic book artist that knows what she's doing. And that, you know, it's a sort of not underhanded compliment to her, but it is underhanded compliment in the sense that unfortunately we haven't seen veteran artists show us that they're veterans of the industry throughout Future State. And I'm so glad that Joelle Jones can defy that unnecessary trend here.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of what you're saying there, except for I still will not be picking it up. But again, it's nothing against Joelle Jones. I just don't. I don't know. Even though I think this is a good series, and you're probably right, I'm probably being a little overcritical of kind of the timing of it. Maybe it is Yara Flor, you know, more toward the start of her career, so she does still have lessons to learn. But I don't know. The character just isn't resonating with me. I'm not excited about her the way you and Rocky are, which is, you know, fine. That's, yeah, you know, different characters for different people. So let's move on to The Flash, Death Race Part 2, written by Brandon Vietti. There's art by Brandon Peterson and Will Conrad in this issue. The colors are by Mike Atea, and the letters are by Steve Wands. What are your thoughts here? I kind of already know which way Rocky's going, so we'll start with you, Trev.
I'm just tired. I'm so tired. There's just not much to say, honestly. I you know me. I usually don't shy away from beating up a book when it's bad, but I do get tired of beating up books. God, this is, I can't think of anything else other than bad. I'm so sort of tongue-tied, mostly because I'm just not trying to, I don't know. Like if I really got into it, I feel like I would basically turn into an avalanche and there would just be no stopping me. So I'm just going to refrain from that in the same way that I did with the Superman of Metropolis. There's really almost nothing redeemable about this book. I thought some of the art early on was pretty okay, but boy, is it messy on a composition level. You have no idea. Well, you do know what's going on half the time, but even then, there's still some visual confusion throughout. It feels like God, Silver Age for Silver Age's sake. And there's a reason that we left the Silver Age 40, 50 years ago. So, you know, I don't see the need to shamelessly return back to it. I'm over it. You know, like I said, that I could be way worse and just take my unusual silence on the book as it's that bad that Dark Knight Nation is not verbally destroying this book.
Yeah, it's problematic. Really, really disliked this issue. You know, I didn't particularly think the first issue of Flash was good, but here's a situation where the second issue is even worse. You know, it's not Dale Eaglesham on art. And so I was like, well, that makes sense. You know, he probably was so exhausted after doing one issue of Flash, he's got to take 2 months off. That seems to be his schedule. But I don't know. Brandon Peterson and Will Conrad, their styles aren't necessarily that far apart that the art should feel so inconsistent the way it does. Everything has this just kind of strange feel. And Brandon Peterson's very fond of outlining all his characters, either in white or red or some kind of bright color. And to me, that always, I don't know, I don't care for that. And so, yeah, the artwork is just, other than the coloring kind of bringing it together and giving it sort of at least a semi look of consistency in terms of the actual line work and such, it's not. It's all over the place, and it's very busy as well. So there's some issues there. I mean, I think the color work is does a lot of heavy lifting here, and it makes it readable, but it's not enough to save the issues in composition and such. So, you know, that's debatable whether they chose to do it correctly or not. And maybe it all goes back to the fact that, yeah, these guys just didn't have enough time. Will Conrad, I never see him team up with anybody, and rarely do I see Brandon Peterson. So if you could have given either of them more time, they could have done the whole book and maybe it would have looked a little better. In terms of the story, I can sort of sum it up all very simply. This is the second issue of Future State Flash. It's supposed to be the end of the story, but instead of being the end of the story, we're told we got to go read Future State Teen Titans, arguably the worst of all the Future State issues. Are you freaking kidding me? Are you really kidding me right now? When I got to the end of the story, like as bad as this story was, I was like, wait, in order to get the end of this bad story, I have to go finish reading an even worse story? Whose brilliant idea was that? It's terrible. It's almost like this was written by like a 7 or 8 year old where they thought, oh, you know what would be a really fun idea? What if the Flash had all the powers of the Rogues? We'll give him all the Rogues' weapons. It doesn't work. I think ultimately choosing to remove the Speed Force, the speed powers of Flash in a Flash series that only lasts 2 issues. It was flawed from the beginning. Like, I don't know whose idea that was. I don't know if it was Brandon Vietti's or somebody else, but a story about an underpowered Barry Allen that has to go up against this, you know, incredibly powerful entity. It doesn't work, at least not again in an issue or in a series where you only get 2 issues. There's just not enough time to explore it. And you end up having to come up with these half-assed ideas like Barry Allen weaponizing all of the Rogues' weapons to go and try to take on this entity. And then, okay, so I have my little kid idea, but let me make it for the adults too, because I'm going to pull in this great, adult, high level concept of Barry Allen is the embodiment of hope. And this famine entity feeds on hope. And so it wants to keep Barry Allen alive and keep feeding and blah, blah, blah. No, it doesn't work on any level. It's overly complicated when you start talking about, you know, the big ideas, and it's, you know, simple ideas like children ideas or kid ideas in terms of execution with weapons and everything. And so much like the art, it's just kind of all over the place and it doesn't work. And if anything, as much as I thought the first issue was below average, this issue too has the incredible distinction of I can't ever remember this happening when I've read a series before. This second issue makes the first issue even worse. Somehow it's retroactively in my mind made the first issue even worse. I thought the first issue was at least you know, you could at least go, you could at least read it. Well, it's not very good, but you could at least read it. After reading the second issue, I'd say don't read either one.
Welcome to Future State.
What's that?
Welcome to Future State.
Oh my God. It's awful. It's awful. This is now in the running. This Flash number two is in the running for the single worst Future State issue for me. It's up there with Teen Titans. It doesn't even have a cool dick stroke moment at the end to kind of pull it back from the brink.
I like
excuse my double entendre there, but you know, it just there's no redeeming quality about this issue, except maybe the coloring.
I think the best part about this issue was you making maybe the unaware pun that the Flash is in the running to be the worst book of Future State.
Yeah, kudos to me. I'm all over the place with my pun. Yeah, it was just like I don't even want to say bad. It's worse than bad. It's awful. So
you know what the worst part is too? You were saying like perhaps if we had more time. Honestly, I don't care how much time we have. I'm tired of the Barry Allen loses his speed and he's not fast enough to stop somebody because they're faster than him. Oh no. Like and then him suiting up and all the rogue stuff felt like some 15-year-old virgin living in his parents' basement, writing fan fiction, to be honest with you.
Yeah, that's exactly what it's terrible. So I don't know. Maybe Rocky enjoyed it. What are your thoughts, Rocky?
Well, first I have to say that I never really heard Trevor's opinion on the art, but I actually love this art. That the second and third page, that double page spread by Brandon Peterson and Will Conrad is fantastic. If you look at the level of detail on that double page spread with Barry Allen putting together the weapons from the various members of his rogues gallery to ultimately face Famine, who feeds off the hope that Barry Allen and the world has. That is the level of detail is incredible. They even have, if you look in the corner, there's even the super speed formula that Johnny Quick uses in the All-Star Squadron. I mean, the level of detail on the pages is incredible. It's actually really good. I disagree strongly on the art. I thought the art was very consistent throughout, and I thought it was I did not like the story. Okay, I want to be clear. But it's another example of just a really bad story that is beautifully drawn, in my opinion. Now, speaking of the story, right off on that same beautiful two-page spread that I've just been bragging about, it also reminds us that Barry Allen is dead, Jay Garrick is dead, Max Mercury is dead, Iris apparently left off-panel in between the issues, and now she's disappeared and she's gone. Barry doesn't seem to be too upset with Iris being gone. So right away, it's like more depression on top of everything else. The story continues. I thought it was the crazy outfit that Barry Allen has. He has no powers, but I actually kind of, there was a part of me that kind of like chuckled. I thought he looked kind of ridiculous. How can you look simultaneously ridiculous and cool at the same time? He kind of looked dumb, but he kind of looked cool with the boomerangs on the chest. And when the whole concept here, I thought was so esoteric that I didn't really, I got very upset. I ranted and raved in my own video on this. And I don't know. I don't even know if I made sense because I was so upset, but this whole notion that somehow hope is an energy that you can suck from or gain energy from, the idea that famine becomes stronger because it feeds off someone's hope is so ridiculous. It's so ridiculous. It's just, it's such a dumb idea. And the reason why it depresses me so much is that the whole point of Rebirth was about hope. You know, Barry hugging Wally, talking about, you know, it's good to see you again and hope is coming back. And what I particularly hate about this story is that hope itself is what is destroying humanity. It's hope itself that does us no good to have. What's good? It doesn't pay to have hope. And yet Barry brags about having it throughout this issue. They almost suggest that Barry has a superpower. Famine actually suggests that he loves Barry Allen because he just never gives up. He always has his hope, and famine will continuously feed off his hope. What a ridiculous concept. Like, that's like bad guys feeding off good. It's just a dumb idea. And so what's the point of that? It's so depressing. And then of course it ends with famine winning, famine pushing Barry Allen a few seconds into the future. So he's forever sort of like a Speed Force ghost because he's displaced constantly out of time. And then it ends with the Changeling from the Teen Titans, as you mentioned, Jace, you know, finding the Flash ring. And apparently it has data on it that for some reason, Changeling, who's got a monkey brain, can figure out that it's got data on her Flash ring just by looking at it. But that's another thing that doesn't make any sense, but whatever. This will now be explained in the second issue of Teen Titans, but no, story-wise, I thought this was a disaster, but visually, again, I would have actually preferred, instead of all those damn word balloons, I would have preferred just looking at the pictures. And I'm pretty sure I could have probably put together a better sequence of dialogue and story by doing my own dialogue if you just gave me the pictures. And that's all I got to say about that.
You know what they needed? They needed Swamp Thing. If you needed to get rid of hope, they needed Swamp Thing to come and make the skies dark and, you know, yeah. No hope for humanity. Famine would have starved. Yeah. That's what they should have done. All right. Well, let's move on to the last book. It's The Next Batman, issue number 3, written by John Ridley. Art by Laura Braga with breakdowns by Nick Darrington. Colors by Arif Prianto. Letters by Clayton Cowles. We also have the second part of the Outsider story. Give me a moment and I will find the credits for you, or at least attempt to. And then there's also the second half of the Arkham Knight story. So Outsiders is written by Brandon Thomas. We have pencils by Sumit Kumar, inks by Raul Fernandez and Sumit Kumar, letters by Jordi Belair, colors by Jordi Belair, and letters by Steve Wands. And then in the Arkham Knight story, it's written by Paul Jenkins. Give me a second to find. This is what I hate about these multiple stories.
Jack Herbert's the artist.
Yeah, Jack Herbert does the art. He's a Brazilian artist, and I really think he's going to make a name for himself. His art's pretty strong. Like I said, written by Paul Jenkins, Jack Herbert on art, Gabe Eltab on colors, and letters by Rob Lee. What about you, Rocky? What'd you think about this, the story and the backups?
I thought this was one of the better ones of the week. I share a lot of my sentiment from the previous issues. I think the best part of The Next Batman is actually the Fox family. I think the dynamic between Lucius Fox and his wife, Tanya Fox, who's a lawyer for the city, trying to justify the shoot on sight law. And them arguing about it, that creates some interesting tension. I think Luke Fox, formerly Batwing, talking with his sister Tammy, his sister Tiffany, talking about their brother Tim Fox, who wants to be called Jace Fox, who's really Batman. Meanwhile, Tammy Fox is in the hospitals, recovering, still in a coma because she was injured by a mask, which inspires her mother Tanya to be a lawyer for the city to, you know, try to justify the shooting on sight laws of all these masked heroes and vigilantes. I think that works off well. I'm particularly looking forward to, ultimately, I think that there's some interesting tension there that Luke Fox has stated that he likes this new Batman. He doesn't know who it is. But at the same time, he doesn't have a good relationship with his brother. And so it's going to be interesting to see the character dynamics that come into play once Luke discovers that his brother is actually the next Batman. So I think that's set up, that character setup. I think John Ridley is handling that relatively well because I'm pulled into that. Where I'm less really pulled in, I'm not really buying into the whole the Batman with I don't I guess I just don't agree with Batman. That's not a criticism of the writing. Maybe that's an underhanded compliment. It kind of rubbed me the wrong way that, you know, this next Batman he's hell bent on turning in these parents that murdered a pedophile that killed their child when he knows bloody well they're likely going to be killed anyway and they're not going to get a fair trial. His obsession with turning them in and calling it into the one good cop left in Gotham to try to turn this murderous couple in, I think that was misguided. And I thought it was forced storytelling that at the end, when one of the parents tries to kill or tries to strangle Batman. I think it would have had more tension had they simply been parents that, you know, they've got their revenge and now here the next Batman is, he's more concerned about turning them in than actually fighting the magistrate. I think that actually bothered me a bit. I mean, it's about priorities. So I think this new Batman, I think Jace has his priorities all screwed up, but in any event, I actually enjoyed it because my frustration with the story is a good frustration because I don't, it's subverting my expectations a little bit. And I actually, I enjoyed it. Want me to talk about The Outsiders and the other two as well?
Yeah.
Quick. Okay. I really like The Outsiders. I wasn't a big fan of the art, Sumit Kumar's penciling. I wasn't really a big fan of, but I love the idea of Black Lightning being sort of like the new soul in this new soul taker sword of Katana. And it's wielded now by Duke Thomas. Duke Thomas is really kick ass. Ultimately they defeat the hoodlums. I can't even remember what the actual plot line was from the first issue, but when they finally overcame, they defeated the bad guys, but the magistrate's still after them. And Duke Thomas there, not wearing a mask, basically saying, go ahead, try to shoot me. And he's got the Soul Taker sword on him that's filled with the essence of Black Lightning, Jefferson Pierce. I think this is a unique take. This is an interesting new hero. Duke Thomas is more interesting now with the Soul Taker sword and being sort of almost attached to Black Lightning than he ever was as the Signal, wearing that ridiculous yellow outfit that I was never a fan of. So I really liked the way this ended. And I think the higher, you know, artistically, I think it suffered. The art was not saved by Jordi Belair's colors, which is rare for me to say. But the story itself, I'm looking forward to future Outsider stories. With respect to Arkham Knight, I really like the Arkham Knight. I love Paul Jenkins. I think he's done a good job. I thought the art was great. I love Jack Herbert's art. The colorist, Gabe Elteb, did a really good job. I really liked how they portray Astrid Arkham as someone who cares about the inmates of Arkham Asylum, particularly for Dr. Phosphorus. She says, we are the few, the broken, the fierce. We are the clinically insane, the champions of Arkham Asylum. Who better to act as Gotham's soldiers of liberty? And to be quite blunt with you, with the next Batman being more concerned about capturing a couple of parents who murdered a pedophile, I think Gotham does need the heroes of Arkham Knight, because somebody's got to get the job done. Unfortunately, the ending was so ridiculous. They attacked the Gotham police headquarters because they want to get the bat signal. Like, what was that about? I didn't get that. Like, why they just want to capture the bat signal and they change it into the sun signal. You know, that ending was just off to me. It's like all that great storytelling and that sacrifice when she actually kills Peacekeeper Six in trying to save Dr. Phosphorus, and only to get the bat signal and remake it into a sun signal. I thought it was a little bit corny, but I enjoyed it. It was a good ride. So overall, this was definitely one of the better issues overall in terms of me enjoying all three of the stories.
All right. Fair enough. What did you think, Trevor?
Oh boy. Well, I actually thought that this was the worst issue of the next Batman regarding the main story. Specifically, I'm kind of split because John Ridley clearly doesn't trust like a comic book artist to do its visual work, but I guess there's precedent here because the art is just horrible. The art is really bad in this issue, and even more profoundly worse than the last one. So I'll kind of backstep and talk about the internal monologue thing. It continues to tell us things unnecessarily when the art should be showing us things. And, you know, again, part of me makes that as a giant criticism to Ridley, but also like, I it's hard to tell whether or not if he had a better artist, if he would still do that. I imagine that he would. There's also this ridiculous inconsistency with Jace's capabilities. He's better when they want him to be better. He's worse when they don't want him to be for the sake of plot. So you're telling me Batman can take out the cybers which have been established as perhaps the greatest threat that the magistrate has to offer, aside from maybe Peacekeeper One, drones and magistrate leadership, no problem. But foot soldiers in the last issue are a no-go. Why? Why? It doesn't make any sense, right? Like, that's suspicious. Batman can just rip off the arms and the legs of these state-of-the-art menacing security robots like chicken off the bone. Also, while he's doing that, while he's fighting the cybers, you notice nobody's firing at him? Nobody's firing at him. The entirety of that pack of magistrate goons are just watching him somehow tear apart the cybers, and nothing is happening. Are you kidding me? How dull is that? There's just so many little things that don't make sense in this issue. For example, there's a conversation between Peacekeeper One and the captain. And the captain refers to the real Batman in the conversation. And Peacekeeper One says the real Batman is dead, which would lead us to believe that he was referring to the new Batman, right? If there's the sort of disparity there. But then the captain refers to the original Batman as the other Batman, only for us to find out that they were referring to Bruce the whole time. And Peacekeeper One simultaneously says that he is and is not the real Batman. What, like, he's just going around in this really awkward circle that doesn't make any sense. Also, since when is Rene Montoya a simp for the rules? When is she totally lost her agency to the point where she's simping for the magistrate now? I don't get it. It doesn't make any sense. Again, for a screenwriter, there's a lot of really clunky dialogue here that lacks rhythm and ultimately repeats information we've already been given. It's not good. It's not good. Also, at the end of the story, right, when the father gets the upper hand on him, because we all saw that coming. We knew that was coming. We literally saw it coming from a mile away, but whatever. How is a baseball bat enough to hurt somebody with top of the line body armor? And somehow in the art, when he's getting hit, there is blood flying out of heavily layered Kevlar. That doesn't make any sense. It's a baseball bat. Like, I get it. The whole point was that he's getting hit just above where the bullet wound was, but that's super dense, highly futuristic Kevlar, right? Like, what's a baseball bat going to do? I don't get it. And the whole premise that the antagonist's main goal is to make the magistrate seem more legal while they're already in power and they're already operating with their own agency is superfluous and pointless. It doesn't make any sense. Any tension that has been built at all for the antagonist is gone immediately. That's most of my commentary on the writing. What Rocky had said about the sort of setting up this dynamic between Jace Fox, I got to make sure I call him the right name or else everybody's going to cancel me, and Luke Fox, we've seen it a million times. We've seen this a million times, and we've seen it done better 999,999 times. Of course. And what I also don't get is, why is Lucius put in this position where he is supplying weapons to the magistrate? Why? He supported Batman his whole life. Without him, Batman doesn't happen. And now he's the enemy for no reason. For what? It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, and then they blame the Joker War for that, his experience in the Joker
dumb
War.
Dumb anyways, yeah. Because it was due to negligence that it happened anyway. So what, Lucius Fox gets up to? I'm sorry, man. Like, I can't stand when people shit all over characters that I like because they need it to happen for their story. I can't stand that, man. Like, it doesn't work. It straight up doesn't work. The tension is all uninspired. It's all derivative. Nothing is actually creative or individual, which is a shame because John Ridley is a much better writer than this. Regarding art, the opening shot, for example, there's this opening page splash image that should be dynamic and set this cold open up. And it just looks like somebody took a background that was pre-done and put a bunch of stickers on it because the perspective is really flat and weird. And they all seem really out of place. The characters look super static throughout the course of the whole issue, which really deflates all of the energy of action. And it also really deflates the more personal scenes with conversation, because the gestural work and acting is super dry and feels just as rigid as the action. And it completely deprives us of any emotional weight that they're going for. And it doesn't help that the writing is also not sufficient enough to provide the emotional weight. And the art certainly isn't backing any of that up. The artist also does a really poor job on deciding what visual story beats to capture. It's inconsistent. One second Batman's here, the next second Batman's there. What type of paneling are we doing here? Is it action to action, moment to moment, aspect to aspect? None of it. It's not consistent. It's poorly done. Like, I don't know. I guess this was just like, we were waiting for Dark Knight to blow his lid because he's been unusually silent this whole time. But boy, am I tired of people who should be professionals in the field making comics that look like it was made by a fan. Sorry, I'm over the next Batman. I want to move on into the Outsider story. I didn't dislike the Outsider story. I didn't quite like it as much as I liked the first installment of Outsiders. I felt like the opening was a little bit jarring because the dialogue was being a little bit unnecessarily vague and choppy with what we were leading to. You know, at first I think it was a little bit unclear whether or not Black Lightning was sort of tied into the Soul Taker Sword, why he is the way he is. They're switching this sort of focus of the dialogue from discussing what's happening to Black Lightning, what happened with Katana. And it's not, it's not really pointing you in a singular direction at any point. It becomes a little bit choppy in that way. And at times the dialogue can be really good, but as it continues to move forward, there's a real oscillation in what's happening there and how they're delivering sort of exposition through dialogue. It just becomes a bit confusing and difficult to discern what's being referred to between word balloons. The plot is relatively simple, but it's effective. You know, it's a sort of classic rebellion story. You know, nothing incredible. I think what makes it more interesting are really the set dressings, you know, the context behind what Black Lightning is now. Again, like Rocky said, it is relatively cool to see what's happening with Duke Thomas, and Duke Thomas filling out a little bit of his own character by taking this level of initiative in the current context of Gotham. I did quite like that. You know, it was all right. You know, I think Sumit Kumar didn't deliver to the same level that he did in the last story. If anybody is coming back from that one, I actually praised Sumit Kumar's art quite a bit. And now it's not without praise here, because I think that Kumar really follows through with the placement and sequence of the camera really well. The biggest thing for me are that the design work got looser, and I think significantly looser in this issue. And so that is really what took it back. But I really do think that from a storytelling perspective, between camera layout, character acting, Sumit Kumar still manages to deliver some pretty dynamic art with a lot of energy and a lot of life to it. It's just, it gets a little bit hard to discern what's happening or what's going on, because you're just getting distracted by how the dialogue refuses to stay on topic. There's parts of, sort of Duke's dialogue when he's fighting, I think that's Cullen Rowe. I think that's Harper Rowe's brother, if I'm not mistaken, that gets sort of, what's the word I'm looking for, indoctrinated into the magistrate. But when he's fighting Cullen, like, one second he's talking to Katana, the next second he's talking to Cullen, the next second he's like referring to something else. It's really sort of unclear with all this jumpiness what he's talking about, unless you really sit there, you go back, you reread it, and you sit there and you try to map it out for yourself. But overall, you know, the story was fine, and I really did like what he was doing character wise with Duke and with Katana, although I felt like her development definitely came to a plateau by the end of issue one. Because issue two doesn't really do a lot with her. But, you know, overall, it wasn't bad. Again, Kumar on a storytelling level does good, although the designs were certainly a little bit weaker. I look forward to seeing what Brandon Thomas is going to do with the Outsiders moving forward, given that he'll have his own playing field and more time to do what he needs to do. The overall, I would just say that this installment felt rushed, which has not been an inconsistent thing throughout Future State. Regarding the Arkham Knight story, you know, thematically, it's another sort of story that's embodying a trope of the sort of the misfits being the good guys. Like Rocky, I do agree that the whole point to them getting the bat signal and turning it into the solar signal or whatever was kind of dumb. You know, like, you probably could have gone into an Ace Hardware and found a light for yourself, and that's the end of the story. Jack Herbert's art was really strong on a design level. I think it reminds me a lot of Ethan Van Sciver, and hopefully he, you know, refrains from developing the personality that Ethan Van Sciver has developed and just maintains a good level of art. You know, overall, it was kind of meh. I am disappointed in a veteran like Paul Jenkins continuing to just dump exposition and big blocks of text all over me, as if, you know, I wanted to shower in words. But, you know, I didn't hate it. I don't know. I guess after the what I feel like is just like the blowout of the first story, I guess this story does seem a little bit better, and I'm less inclined to go after it, because I feel like I've wasted all my energy shitting on the next Batman. But, you know, it's all right. I don't actually think I'm going to buy the fourth issue, to be honest with you. I have been buying the first three issues, and I think the only reason I even wanted to continue buying and pick up the third issue was for the Outsider story. And now that that's there, and with the next Batman getting worse rather than better, I don't even think I'm going to pick up the fourth one. I don't mind having an incomplete series.
Well, even if you pick up the fourth issue, you're gonna get an incomplete story, and I'll talk about that at the end. But let me get my thoughts on these specific stories, and then I'll talk about why none of this is gonna end. I agree with Trevor on the art wholeheartedly. I think Nick Darrington's a very talented artist. I think Laura Braga's a very talented artist. They're not used to working, you know, Nick's not used to just doing thumbnail kind of layouts, and Laura's not used to drawing over the way somebody else has composed panels. So again, I have to point to, you didn't give them enough time to do what they know how to do well, and you shove them together, and the art suffers to such a degree that it's just terrible. And can somebody explain to me, I feel like Trevor here picking out these little nitpicky things, right there on page two, Batman standing, hands raised as he faces a magistrate. They're about to shoot them, and he can clearly see there's nothing in his hands. Mm-hmm. The leader of the magistrate has told his troops to shoot them. You have to think if Batman makes any move to reach for anything, they're immediately going to open fire. But then all of a sudden, when you look at the next panel, he's holding something in his hand.
Yep.
And then he's throwing these grenades at the drones. Where in God's name did these grenades or stun devices or EMP, whatever the hell they are, how do they just magically appear in his hand? Can somebody explain that to me?
Oh, because the book is bad for 500.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah. The book is bad. The art is bad.
I 100% agree with you. There's a lot of little things like that where the physical blocking just doesn't make sense. I mean, I definitely just blew my load getting really angry at this book and didn't really dissect it because I was just so mad at how a mediocre book continues to get worse. But yeah, agree.
And we expect more, like Trevor said, we expect more from John Ridley. And I've never, you know, full disclosure, I've never watched an episode of Empire. I haven't watched a lot of those kind of tropey soap operas like that. But I do remember my mom when I was a kid watching Dallas. And this is what I imagine that Ridley is drawing on, right? Some kind of like, to him, the Fox family is like that family from Empire that's led by Terrence Howard, and they're all at odds with each other and drama because reasons, because none of it makes sense. Like, I don't care what happened to Lucius Fox in Joker War. I don't care that his daughter's in the hospital and you know, trying to recover from horrific injuries. That's the case with a lot of people in Gotham during Joker War. You don't blame Batman for that. You don't blame Bruce Wayne. It doesn't change your core character. You would never be helping the magistrate. It just doesn't make any sense. And now he's at odds with his wife because he says, let the peacekeeper do your job. Let the peacekeepers do there. And she gets up and, you know,
Tanya, I didn't mean that. Nah, Lucius, you said it how you said it. Like, no, what? This is like the most tropey, you know, prime time soap opera-y. And I don't pick up a Batman book to read a soap opera about the Fox family. I'm sorry, I don't. Great, John Ridley, Batman is now a person of color and diversity because diversity, you know, like I talked about earlier with Mr. Miracle. No, I had zero problem with Luke Fox becoming Batwing. I would have had zero problem with Luke Fox becoming Batman. That would have made more sense to me. But now it's going to be Tim Fox or Jace Fox or whatever the hell he's calling himself. It feels so disconnected to me. And it just feels like diversity for diversity's sake. If it could have happened more organically, I wouldn't have less of a problem with it. It doesn't have anything to do with the color of his skin for me. It just, the story doesn't make sense and it's not good and it's not interesting. And, you know,
and it's unoriginal.
Yeah, exactly. And for a lot of the same reasons that Trevor's saying, yeah, so he can rip the arms off robots, but then a baseball bat takes him out. Like it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Just not good storytelling. And you put this horrible art on top of it and we're left feeling just disappointed. That's like my biggest feeling. You know, I know John Ridley, the other history of the DC universe has been one of the best comics I've read in recent years. I know the guy's got talent and this is bad.
Well, the funny part is I do like the other history of the DC universe. I'm reluctant to call it a comic book. It feels more like a picture book because there's almost no sequential narrative.
That's true. That's true. Yeah.
But like there's nothing original about it. There's literally, at least in the other issues, there have been small redeeming qualities. God, I wish the viewers could see me look into the camera and say there is nothing redeeming about this story. Nothing. Not even from a basic like Darrington's. I can't even make this Laura Braga and Darrington aren't used to this because even Darrington's breakdowns suck. Where he's putting the camera is flaccid. They're like even action scenes that are supposed to be high octane.
Well, I guarantee you there's probably times where Laura is trying to. She's trying to put her own stamp on it. She's used to doing her own layouts. So she's probably, you know, changing things slightly, which is throwing everything off. It just goes back to, you can't expect these artists who don't work like this with this type of process to all of a sudden be thrown into this process, having never done it before and make it look good. It's not going to happen.
I just think that there are things and qualities about the art, and I'm not doing this as a means to just shit all over Braga and Darrington. I've actually never seen Laura Braga's art prior to the next Batman, and I've seen good stuff from Nick Darrington, but like there are just things that are inherently bad regardless of the collaborative nature of their efforts. I mean, like, you know, if Darrington's doing the breakdowns, then he's establishing camera. Okay, then why is the camera being set in all of the wrong places? Why are you not pulling in on shots where we should be feeling the weight of the drama, whether it's a conversation or an action scene? Why are you off on this like really planar sort of angle to action when we should be up in there, right? Like be feeling like we're a part of it. Facial expressions. I mean, that's all Braga. Like that's design work that is totally irrelevant to her drawing over somebody else's breakdowns. The faces are super rigid, bro. Like they barely move in between panels as they're talking. There's just not expressionism at all.
Yeah, but again, I'm not gonna. I mean, yes, they did not execute, and I'm not trying to make excuses for them. But I'm also saying that when you're an artist and you're doing it all from scratch, if something doesn't work, you know it's not working, and you can go and start doing something over. You know, Laura gets the layouts from Nick, and she starts trying to tweak things because they're not working for her, but she probably doesn't have time to go back and do it herself in the first place. Otherwise she would have done it herself. So while I get what you're saying, I there's no way to know for sure. The bottom line is for whatever reason, they didn't execute, and I'm not making excuses for anybody. The art is bad. So let's just leave it at that. And I'm going to move on to the outsiders. I'll start with the art here. I thought the art was pretty good in the first part of the outsiders. And yeah, like Trevor said, the art here, it's definitely a step back. And I don't know what the difference was. I don't know if Sumit Kumar had less time or what, but it doesn't work for me. It's not done as well as the first issue, but I think it's still narratively and you know, technically in terms of the transitions from panel to panel and the compositions, I think it's still pretty good. Just feel like the line work isn't quite as good as the first go round. As far as the story itself, part of the reason I think that the first Outsider story works so well is it was focused on Katana, and the tone of the story captured who Katana is very, very well. This is the Signal, and I'm not a Duke Thomas guy at all. I think he's a boring character. And so maybe that's why I found this just kind of boring. Plus we're getting the fact that the whole story is sort of narrated by this supposed speech that Duke Thomas gave to a crowd of dissidents. And so it's a lot of dialogue and it's kind of hokey and it's kind of boring, which sort of sums up who Duke Thomas is as a character to me. And so I guess in that way, I'll say good job because you summed him up, but it also tells me exactly why I won't read a story starring Duke Thomas, because for me, there's nothing there. I will agree with Rocky that the idea of Black Lightning being trapped in the sword is kind of cool, but much like why I expect there to be no end to the next Batman in issue 4, and we didn't really get an end to the Arkham story, we don't get an end here, right? It's Duke Thomas walking up to a crowd of magistrates saying, you know, here I am, you can't stop me, go ahead and shoot me, whatever. And you know, he's about to whip out the Black Lightning sword again and whoop some ass, apparently. So, you know, I like the first one, and I'll credit that to it being a Katana story. And Katana does show up here, but this is really a Duke Thomas story, and he's not a character that I care about, so I didn't care about this story. When it comes to the last story, once again, the Arkham Knight story is my favorite in the book. That's not to say that it's particularly good. You could see it coming a mile away. In my mind, I knew they were going there not for the reasons that were sort of implied early on, but to do something symbolic. And that's exactly what we saw. They steal the bat symbol. Yeah, they could have gone to a hardware store and gotten their own, but that wouldn't have had the gravitas, Trevor. See, it's the fact that this used to be the bat symbol, and now they've turned it into their sun symbol. And that also ensures that the bat signal will never be used for nefarious purposes. So, you know, reasons.
So good. So it, good.
Yeah. So it doesn't, you know, ultimately it's average. But once again, when average is the best of the three stories, you have a problem. So it was okay. The art is by far the high point. Jack Herbert's art is done really, really well. I did think, as much as I'm a huge fan of Paul Jenkins, that yeah, it was a little dialogue heavy, and I kind of wish he could have been a little better at economy of words. But I did still enjoy it, and I thought it was okay, but it could have been better. Now, this last week, or last week as you're listening to this, it was announced that there will be an ongoing Future State Gotham story or series, and that's why none of these stories are really going to end. We're going to get more stories of the Arkham Knight and her team of anti-heroes. We're going to get more of the Outsiders. We're going to get more of Next Batman. There's already been a digital Next Batman series announced and a regular Next Batman series announced. So I don't know. Maybe DC just assumed sales on Future State were going to be good and people were going to be interested in this era of Gotham. We're not going to get any of the rest of it. We're not going to get more Swamp Thing or you know, Future State Aquaman. I would pick up a Future State Aquaman series in a heartbeat. But no, what are we going to get? To no one's surprise, more Batman. It's not enough to tell Batman in this era. Let's go tell what's going on in Gotham in the Future State era. You know what, DC? I don't give a shit. I really don't. You know, we can't get good stories and we can't get clean endings with these stories that we're getting in these Future State books because no, we got to keep going. We got to keep going in an ongoing series. And so I just think that's problematic. More of the magistrate, more of this bad storytelling. Like, do you think anything I've read in Future State, any of the books that are set in Gotham makes me want to go read Future State Gotham, especially when you're starting off with the Red Hood story from Joshua Williams and the Doug artist? No,
Doug,
you could not have picked a worse One, to start with, I don't care. I don't care about John Ridley's Fox / Empire melodramatic primetime soap opera. And now you're going to put there's so many good books and so many good creators that you could put out there that would get fans excited. And instead, mediocre future state event at best is what we can call it. And you're going to give us more of that. Like, it's just another terrible decision by DC that has me thinking, you know, this time next year, having done our best of 2020 recently, all I can think is best of 2020 episode in 2022 when we do it. I'm going to look back on 2021 and be like, yeah, by the end of the year, I dropped all my DC books because they all sucked.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this is far and away the worst next Batman issue. I think the first one actually ended up being the best, and I didn't particularly enjoy that. And it got progressively worse. And I'm kind of with Trevor. I wouldn't even buy issue 4, except I already pre-ordered it with my.
I literally, as we were talking, I messaged my retailer. I was like, hey, man, do me a favor, drop the next issue, the next Batman. I'll buy 3 books to replace it just because I don't want, you know, I don't want to bone my LCS.
Yeah.
But like, there's no way I'm buying the book. And I think that this plan that they have is going to bone them big time in the long run, because what they don't realize is that most people like us bought these future state books because it was the next big thing and it was short. And we figured at bare minimum, if it's bad, it's going to be over soon, but it is going to be the thing that's going to define the universe moving forward, or what have you, or it's the answers that we were waiting for after Death Metal, whatever, however you want to frame it. And that's why we bought these stories, not because we like them. And seeing, I think anybody with a brain, for the most part, has been able to condemn Future State for being bad in a general sense. And I think that's going to bite DC in the ass, because now that you don't have that fresh new Future State logo that everybody's wondering about, and you're just rehashing things that people already don't like, I don't think anybody's going to come. You know why people bought the next Batman? Let's be 100% real. Speculators bought it because it's the first appearance of a black Batman. That's why they bought it.
I bought Future State because, like Trevor said, I had to buy it sight unseen. I'm like, they're all only 2 issues. I'm just going to get them all. I had to order the first and second issues before I even got a chance to read the first issue, because that's the way comics work. You know, you're ordering everything 2 months in advance.
Yeah.
But yeah, now I feel completely taken advantage of and burned. And, you know, I mean, I shouldn't say completely taken advantage of. It was my choice. Nobody made me buy them all. But I'm wanting to support DC, my favorite publisher. And yeah, you're damn right. I'm not going to give them any more money for anything that says Future State on it, especially when I'm going to get the preview copies, the press copies. And granted, you know, I only have access to them for a short period of time, but long enough to read them. And I don't care that it has a watermark on it or whatever. I'll glance through it. And if it looks interesting enough, I might read the issue, but I'm not giving them any more money for anything that says Future State on it. I just, hell no. Lesson learned. And the future's not looking bright for DC. I keep hearing from creators, just wait, there's a couple more announcements coming. Every time they make another announcement, I'm like, man, you're just digging the hole deeper. Oh, so now we're going to get another Infinite Frontier. We knew about Infinite Frontier 0. Now we're getting another Infinite Frontier number 1 that's going to introduce the next stage. Okay, well, it better have some characters I care about by creators I care about. Otherwise, if it's more of the same crap, then whatever, I'm not going to pay any attention.
The worst part is it's always so easy to go, wait until the next one. Wait until the next one, because there's always a next one. You're always telling us to wait, because the more you tell us to wait, the more we'll say, okay, you know what? As fans of DC Comics, we'll wait. We'll pick up the next one to be disappointed. Oh, you want us to wait again?
No, no more waiting.
Oh,
no more waiting. Any last thoughts, Rocky?
My last thoughts are, in terms of my grade, this week was not the best week for me. Overall, I gave it a 6.4 this week. I added up all my grades. I gave Harley a 7.5, Superman, Metropolis a 4, Flash a 5, Wonder Woman an 8.5. Next Batman, I gave a 7, Swamp Thing, I gave a 6.5. So overall, a 6.4 score for this week. Not the best week, not the worst. And I'm looking forward to it. Just a couple of things about the future of DC. I do think that we got Ram V on Catwoman. We got Tom Taylor on Nightwing. I think that there are some good storytelling points that Williamson has identified that might be an Infinite Frontier. I'm I'm hopeful that there's going to be a couple of some gems moving forward with DC, but you know, it's hard not to share some of both of your expressed trepidation moving forward with DC. Particularly, the most bothersome thing to me about Future State is the complete editorial disregard of establishing a timeline and not really seeming to care about readers not really knowing where all these stories take place or where they fit in, as if somehow it should just fairly, did they just assume it's going to be obvious or that we're just going to reread all the stories two or three times to figure all this out? The disregard for an event like this, it makes me wonder if they're going to have the same kind of disregard moving forward for continuity. Williamson made the comment that he doesn't know where readers are getting this idea that DC doesn't care about continuity anymore. He doesn't know where people are getting that. And I say to Joshua Williamson, Josh, we're reading the stories. Don't insult our intelligence. We're getting it from inferring what you're saying. We're reading between the lines. Your Flash was devoid of continuity on multiple levels, so I find that even more incredible that you would say such a thing. But after Death Metal and the nonsense and I think there is a concern about continuity for DC moving forward. Good stories are good stories, but we need to have a cohesive universe to tell them in.
Yeah, I agree. I will be picking up Tom Taylor's Nightwing. For me, a lot of it is just, you know, why isn't Mark Waid on Superman? Philip Kennedy Johnson, you know, he's talented, but yeah. it's something I say all the time, as goes Superman, so will go the DC universe. I think if Kennedy Johnson's Superman can somehow surprise us and be really good, then maybe it'll lift up the line. But, I mean, that remains to be seen. So I guess we'll have to wait, and see. And as far as the continuity goes, I almost feel like, well, DC themselves was like thinking same that we were along the lines of, well, you know, these Future State issues are only two issues each. They're kind of short. Maybe we don't need to really figure out the continuity that closely. Just, you know, you guys just go do whatever you want to do and that's it. But like I just said, this era is not going to end because we're hearing about all these multiple books that are coming out of Future State that are still going to be set in that timeline. So you should have given us some goddamn guidance on where this stuff happens and made it make sense instead of just, you know, throwing everything at the wall and seeing what sticks. That's a Marvel move, guys. That's you know, that's first grader stuff. And
the worst part was, is that at least at times Marvel's been able to make it work. DC clearly cannot make it work.
No, I mean, that's just, you know, look up DC in the dictionary and it's comic publisher continually trying to make their timelines work. And utterly failing. You know what they should do in my mind? Let Robert Venditti take a crack at it. He made Hawkman's timeline and continuity make sense. Give Venditti lock him in a room for a couple of years. Not that I would want Rob to suffer that torture, but he could figure it out. He could find a way, but not if they keep doing stuff like they're doing with this Future State garbage. But anyway.
In fact, just it's funny. I just want to make a quick comment. You mentioned Robert Venditti. Joshua Williams said something very interesting in his interview. He said that when he wants a good opinion on anything he's writing or a lot of the other writers will go to Venditti, because he said Robert Venditti is not a DC guy. He's not steeped in DC lore. And Robert Venditti put a lot of effort into Hawkman, reading back issues, trying to understand Hawkman. And whenever if they want what they feel an objective opinion, they'll always put a story in front of Robert Venditti, and he tells the story of when they introduced Sandman when Sandman showed up in Rebirth, and they gave it to Robert Venditti, and they knew from Robert Venditti's reaction that Rebirth would do well.
Knowing Rob, that doesn't surprise me at all. So my score for this week is a lowly 4.5, which I think is my lowest I've ever given, along with the first week. And it's just dragged down by the horrible scores I'll give. Like, I don't know, to me, Superman of Metropolis is like a 1 or a 2, maybe. It's just awful. Flash is kind of the same. So it really drags down some of the books. Like I said, Wonder Woman, I thought was, you know, kind of average, around a 5. Harley Quinn, probably around the same. Next Batman, maybe a 3 or a 4. So yeah, it's really getting pulled down by just mediocre garbage. So, and you probably feel the same, Trevor, I'm assuming.
Yeah, I'm over it. I'm exhausted. Congratulations, DC. You've crowned Image as my favorite comic book publisher now. So good job.
Yeah, that's the great thing. There are so many awesome independent stories, everybody. So if you're feeling the same way that we're feeling about Future State, there's plenty of independent books out there. Go listen to our best of episodes, part one and part two from last weekend. We talk about a lot of great comics that came out in 2020 and even some of the things we're looking forward to in 2021. Mostly we're all looking forward to taking another drink because it's tough. It's tough out there. You know, so for years we've sort of been indoctrinated to look forward to the next big thing from one of the big two, and it's not that way anymore. It's going to be interesting as more creators probably start going the creator-owned route. Are they going to be able to announce things, you know, far in the future? It's going to be much tougher for them to drum up excitement in the way that the big two have. They'll still be able to do it, but the timelines are just going to shrink down. You know, they're going to be announcing, hey, in right before the solicit comes out, probably, you know, in a couple months, it's going to be, whereas the publishers plan out, you know, much farther, you know, they're planning a year or two in advance. And so they can announce things and drum up that excitement. It's going to be different. It's going to be 2021 is going to be a very interesting year for comics. So we'll see how it goes. Anyway, thanks for joining, everybody. I'll throw it to Boom. Why don't you let everybody know where they can find you online?
Well, I can be found at Comic Boom with an exclamation mark on YouTube and on Twitter at Metropolis40.
Great. And Trevor, I think I forgot to ask you what your score. So give your score for the week and then let everybody know where they can find you online.
Yeah, this DC scored an overwhelming 3 from me this week out of 10. Congratulations. You know, this it certainly wasn't without books that weren't worth picking up. You know, Harley Quinn, if you want a fun little romp, pick it up. If you want something that's going to make you consider the fabric of life, go read Swamp Thing. And if you want a sort of balanced story with good art, good story, and an interesting message, go read Wonder Woman. The rest of them, feed it to the dogs. If you want to find me feeding my copy of the next Batman to the dogs, you can check me out on YouTube at Dark Knight Nation for analysis-based comic book videos and discussions with co-hosts such as these gentlemen here. And if you think that maybe this guy is critical and perhaps he might take that to making his own comic, he did. Check out darkknightnation.com/shop. Pick up a copy of Area 51, The Helix Project, issue 1. The Kickstarter to issue 2 will be launching very shortly. And by very shortly, I mean very shortly. And if you want to get an idea of what that's like, feel free to reach out to these two gentlemen on social media. They've both read it. And neither of them hated it as much as they hated Future State. So I'll take that as a win.
Yeah. And everybody, I'll put links to both Comic Boom and Dark Knight Nation in the show notes. So if you're having trouble finding them, you can go click there and find them. So once again, we want to thank everybody for listening. And we'll talk to you next time.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.